Hi, this is Paul, and this is Rough Draft for Sunday, where I'm running through the current status of my Sunday sermon. We've been in the Sermon on the Mount for a number of weeks. The Sermon on the Mount is a tremendously important part of Jesus' teaching. Craig Bloomberg noted about it, "Perhaps no other religious discourse in the history of humanity has attracted the attention which has been devoted to the Sermon on the Mount. Philosophers and activists from many non-Christian perspectives have refused to worship Jesus, nevertheless have admired his ethic. In the 20th century, Mahatma Gandhi was the sermon's most famous non-Christian devotee. Literature on the sermon is vast. One recent survey has itemized 36 different interpretations. Only 8 of the most significant and influential approaches would be listed here." And I listed them in my introduction to the Sermon on the Mount sermon, which was a number of weeks ago. You can find it on YouTube or on the church channel. But here's this frame that surrounds the sermon. And in many ways, we've come full circle because the Beatitudes and the conclusions, well, that's where we're at. Now the Beatitudes are, I've noted, people will often read them for devotions, because even if I were to press the people on exactly what they think these Beatitudes are and how they should be interpreted, as Craig Bloomberg noted, things might get a little squishy, but there's something about the words and their power that fascinate us and draw us. And quite broadly, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." It's beautiful. Now, look at the rest of it. "Well, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction." I don't find a lot of people reading that for devotions, for a meeting, or something for a little spiritual pick-me-up. "Beware of the false prophets who come in sheep's clothing." It was Jesus that coined that and gave that to us. Wolves in sheep's clothing. That's from Jesus. "But inwardly they are ravenous wolves. Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven." This is a very different part. And often different people bring out the beginning from the end. Yet most all this structural work says these two things really belong side by side. Well, I got to adjust the slide. At the end, clearly we have the apocalyptic Jesus. As one commentator notes, it contains a concluding admonition to the community to engage in Christian practice, an admonition that has the character of a basic principle. All three sections are characterized by opposites: broad and narrow gate, good and evil fruit, doers of God's will, and doers of lawlessness. A house with its foundation on rock and sand. It's all antithesis. It's night and day, black and white, good and bad. The first, it's, well, again, how do you interpret, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God"? Is that just nice poetry, wishful thinking? Here at the end, it's a splash of cold water against your face. Maybe it's the romanticism through which we read the Beatitudes. Maybe, in fact, those should feel like a splash of cold water, too. All of them here at the conclusion are about the final judgment. Here the negative aspect, the warning against catastrophe, dominates. The conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount is like the conclusion of all Matthean discourses. And so when he said that, I thought, well, I got to page through this book, and we'll see some of them. They usually end by looking towards the judgment awaiting the community. And so you've got weeping and gnashing of teeth and all sorts of figures. Well, let's go through it. "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Wow, that really rubs against our egalitarian democratic sensitivities. Watch out for false prophets. They come in sheep's clothing. If you want to get a sense of Jesus' mastery of images, it's right there. And you could look at the far side with you know, wolves taking off sheep's clothing. Well, what's the difference between a sheep and a wolf? Well, maybe to the grass, the sheep look ravenous, but to people, wolves look ravenous because they'll eat you. They come in with sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. They're ravenous. They're hungry. They'll eat you up. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will know them. Now right here, well, what's good and bad? Well, the wolves are takers who dress like the meek. And Jesus is basically saying, in time, you'll see. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Didn't you say, don't be anxious? And didn't you say, ask and it shall be received? And now you hit me with this law stuff? Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Go away from me, you evildoer. I thought Jesus was supposed to be there with the little lamb in his arm and all the children around, and he would never turn anyone away. And here there are people who did amazing things. They prophesied. They said things and things came true. And they made expositions that made everything clear. And they drove out demons. They released people from their bondage to addiction or their bondage to insanity. And Jesus said, I don't even know who you are. You don't belong at my meal or in my house. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rains came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundations on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and doesn't put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The winds came up, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. It's a conclusion to teaching, and Jesus is saying, do what I say. Notice that both houses get storms, but only one survives. Seems rather Darwinian in some respects. Now, as the commentator noted, this isn't uncommon for Matthew. Matthew 13:47-50. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake. I think into the sea, probably. I didn't go through and check that, but the NIV often says lake instead of sea. It should be sea. And caught all kind. I'll have to look at it. And caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw away the bad. Well, what's bad fish? Well, bad fish is the fish that the fishermen don't want. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In other words, there's fire, but it doesn't kill you. Well, I thought Jesus was supposed to be nice. Another parable of Jesus. Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? Seven seems a lot. Maybe fool me once. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Well, that doesn't seem responsible. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. He began the settlement. A man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. since he is not able to pay the master order that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay everything back. The servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. This guy owed 10,000 bags of gold. 100 silver coins. That's something, but that's not 10,000 bags of gold. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servants fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. How do you do that from in prison? When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged, and they went and they told the master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tickled with feathers. No, to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart, meaning from your core. Huh. Torture? Lakes of fire? This is a strange contrast from what we saw last week. Last week, ask and it shall be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. God wouldn't give stone if a son asked for bread, or a scorpion or a snake if he asked for fish. God wouldn't do that. And we thought, well, God is too negligent. Or Jesus too lenient or unrealistic or optimistic. This isn't how the world works. This week, it's all antithesis, good and bad, heaven and hell, right and wrong, torturers and lakes of fire. Where did the nice Jesus go? Well, we're a little inconsistent when it comes to the kingdom of nice as well. In many ways, a lot of people think, well, culture should be nice, the country should be nice, it should be cakes and candy for everyone, right? In 2017... Kendall Jenner made a commercial, Live for Now, Live for Now Moments Anthem in 2017, and got in a little bit of hot water because Kendall Jenner had a little Black Lives Matter poster. And so, but if you remember the commercial, everyone's happy, and this is a protest? Well, what exactly are they protesting? Well, not really quite sure, but now, just a couple of days ago in Chicago, Black Lives Matter protest. Well, they had frozen water bottles and incendiary devices, and behind those banners, they pulled out pointed, sharpened PVC, and they attacked the cops over Christopher Columbus statue. 49 cops were injured and 19 to the hospital. That's very different from Kendall Jenner handing some guy who looks like a model in with a nice little ball cap. No shields, no body armor. What happened between 2017 and 2020? Everybody wants to be nice. Everybody wants to be kind. Well, justification for punishment, even eternal damnation for all sorts of evil, is always just beneath the surface. Just ask someone, what do pedophiles deserve? Or what do Hitler and Mao and Stalin deserve? Or what does Christopher Columbus deserve? You know, on one hand, we're all nicey-nicey and everything should be great. And then before you know it, bang! It's just a difference of, well, who we lower the boom on. If there's anything 2020 should show us is that life gets apocalyptic fast. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad to the road is the road that leads to destruction. Good times make us fat, happy, and lazy. And Jesus says, everybody's going one way. That's human nature. Go the other. And so on one hand, we really respect that because we look at Olympic athletes and admire their devotion, or perhaps we look at people who are really committed to a cause and do so sacrificially, and we admire the devotion. But the media very much grooms us on expectations that life is easy and comfortable, and life is an entitlement. But doing the right thing is really hard. And that's part of the reason the Pepsi protests sort of got laughed off the internet in 2017. They wouldn't dare post it today. Slate Star Codex, which is used to be a favorite blog of mine, the owner turned it down because the writer took it off the internet because the New York Times thought it was within their mandate to somehow, he had always written it under a pseudonym because he's a psychiatrist in the Bay Area and he didn't want his patients exposed, but the New York Times thought, no, that should, everyone should know his name, so he took his blog down. But fortunately, I've got pieces of it that I've stored. He once did a question. He's a writer in the Bay Area. You know, this is one of the most affluent, wealthy, exclusive places around today. How bad are things? 1% of people are in prison. And this is all, of course, the United States. 2% of people are on probation. 1% of people are in nursing homes and hospices, now prisoned by COVID. 2% of people have dementia. 20% of people have chronic pain. 7% of people suffer from depression. 2% are cognitively disabled. 1% of people are schizophrenia. That's 1 in 100. Think about your college class or high school class. 20% of people are on food stamps. 1% of people are in a wheelchair. 7% of people are alcoholics. 7%. 0.5% of people are heroin users, chronic. 5% of people are unemployed. Well, all right, this is more like 20%. 3% of people are former workers now receiving disability. Probably more now, too. 1% of people experience domestic violence each year. So how many people haven't experienced that in their lifetime, either as a spouse or a child watching a parent get beaten? Those numbers go up fast. 10% of people were sexually abused as children, many of whom are still working through the trauma. 9% of people, male and female, have been raped during their lifetime. So, the good and the bad road. Does it still seem kind of mean, kind of unusual? Or is the truth that outside of this little media bubble where Kendall Jenner gives a nice coke to a cop, the world is hard and brutal, and there's a lot of suffering? Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. They're a cunning pack. They're all out there. They call you up on the phone. They knock on your door. Maybe they're your friends. Maybe they're your even your own family, and you can't really trust them. And they're all over. Maybe they're on TV. Maybe they're pastors. Maybe they're politicians. Maybe they're salesmen. What are they looking for? They want to take. They want your money, they want your life, they want your body, they want your attention. In time, they'll show who they are. Make no mistake about it. Human beings are the most dangerous creature on the face of the earth. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Everybody's praying, everybody's using Jesus' name. Well, not so much anymore. Well, really not a whole lot then either. Miraculous signs impress, but they aren't proof of alignment with God the Father. Well, what is? Well, look at the whole sermon. That's what the whole sermon is about. This sermon begins with what seems like impossible hope, fairy tales, or romance for the lowly, and ends with difficult truths that we all experience. Well, how can we know? How can we know what the will of the Father is? Well, Jesus just told us. Reread the sermon. Read the rest of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They'll tell you. The difficulty we have is that we have trouble fitting it together. Tim Keller notes this. Particularly impressive to readers over the centuries has been what one writer called, that's Jonathan Edwards, the admirable conjunction of diverse excellencies in Jesus Christ. And this is what we see. Ask and it shall be given. Seek and you'll be found. But go by the narrow way. Watch out for the wolves. Jesus says both, because that's the way it is. He's telling you how to live. Admirable conjunction of diverse excellencies in Jesus Christ. That is, in him we see qualities and virtues we would ordinarily consider incompatible in the same person. We would think they could never be combined like that. But because they are strikingly beautiful. Jesus combines high majesty with greatest humility. He joins the strongest commitment to justice with an astounding mercy and grace. And he reveals a transcendent self-sufficiency and yet entire trust in and reliance upon his heavenly Father. We are surprised to see tenderness without any weakness, boldness without any harshness, humility without any uncertainty. Indeed, accompanied by a towering confidence, readers can discover for themselves his unbending conviction, but complete approachability, his insistence on truth, but always bathed in love, his power without insensitivity, integrity without rigidity, passion without prejudice. Jesus says, "Follow the will of my Father." And we say, "What does that look like?" And Jesus says, "Me. Me. It looks like me." How audacious. How bold. How, are you a megalomaniac? We know what megalomaniacs look like. Ravenous wolves, right? In sheep clothing. "I'm here for the people. Let the people die for me. Or let the people die for the statue or the standard or the institution or the government I set up for them. I go last." What does Jesus do? We think, well, this last built a house built upon a rock. Well, remember, storms come to both, and we think, finally, the security I've been looking for. Well, Jesus was crucified. James was the first disciple out of the gate to be martyred. Stephen was stoned by Saul, who would be Paul. Peter was crucified. Paul would be imprisoned and beheaded. Jesus said things like, "They will hate you like they hated me." And blessed are you when they persecute you. And you think, is this really the kind of security I want? The kind of security I want looks more like a castle or millions of dollars in the bank so that no matter what COVID does to the economy, I'll have enough. Or maybe gold instead of American dollars for when the economy crumbles. And. Apocalypse comes to us all. Apocalypse always comes. It might be global, it might be national, it might be your city, it might be your family, it might only be you. That little lump that is cancer, that thing that you said 15 years ago carelessly on the internet, now you lose your job over. The just driving home from work and there was a car accident. The betrayal that means the life that you had expected. Don't bank on it. It's the age of decay. It's the world that we live in. Apocalypse always comes. And Jesus says, nobody's more apocalyptic than me. I thought you were supposed to be nice. I'm good, he says. I'm good. None of us get out of here alive. So, how should you live? Now, Jesus practiced the will of the Father. Do you want to see what God's will looks like? Look at his son. That's what sons do. The apocalypse came for him. He wasn't excluded from the apocalypse. My God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus was revealed to the world. Apocalypse means revelation. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Surely, he says to the brigand, the revolutionary hanging on the cross next to him, today you'll be with me in paradise. And the Roman centurion, after witnessing what he did. Surely this man is the Son of God. Well, this would just all be a story of a remarkable man who met an untimely end, an unjust end at the hands of the government. But, of course, many people are killed by governments. How many walk out of a tomb? You say, well, I don't believe that walking out of the tomb stuff. Okay. Kind of colors the rest of the story, doesn't it? What if he did walk out of the tomb? What does the Sermon on the Mount mean if he walked out of the grave? If he walked out of the grave, it means he was standing on a rock and the storm came and he was killed by it. But he rose King of the world. So how should you live? In many ways with Jesus, if you live like him, you will die like him, and you will be raised like him. That's what he offers. It's a gracious invitation. Well, that's all mental, Pastor. That's all what I'm thinking. No, it's not just mental. It's not just thinking. It's not just making mental commitments. On the night he was betrayed, he took bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body broken for you. Take, eat, in remembrance of me." And then he took the cup and he said, "This is a new covenant in my blood." A new covenant? The old covenant was that of, well, animals took the fall for us. Now Jesus is the sacrifice. He goes into the fire of the altar that represents the presence of God. He goes into the apocalypse. He goes into that place where Moses could only get close to, have his back to in the cleft of the rock. Jesus goes right in and comes out and says, "This is a new covenant. Those animals died on your behalf. Now I die for you." Is there any other master like him? Is there any other person worth serving? Is there anyone else you should better believe? He gives his body and his blood for you. And he says, "Follow me. Live like me. Die like me. Be raised like me."